Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Operations Manager at CRA Resources. And today we're sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest, Elizabeth Weeks Rowe. Elizabeth is Clinical Operations Manager for a life sciences company. She's also a writer and speaker in our industry. And we'll be discussing CRA soft skills and how to become a more competitive job seeker. If you missed our last podcast about how to become a CRA and how entry-level candidates can compete, make sure to visit craresources.com/blog to listen and check out our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered to your inbox. So I'll turn it over to Angela so she can give us some more detail on our topic today.
Well, thank you, Miss Becky, and I'll apologize in advance in case I sneeze. I was in the hotel over the night, and it was awfully dusty, so my apologies. So just warning, but but I am super excited, Miss Elizabeth, that you were here with us, and you know, the Alculage just can't go too far. And for all of you guys that are listening, I mean, she's done a great job and as an instructor with a wonderful clinical research educational organization. And I don't know if Elizabeth, if you want to list the name of that or not, but I'll let you do that if you want to. But she published not too long ago a really great article on, well, actually it was a post and we turned it into an article on about how important it is to be able to hone your public speaking skills if you want to be a CRA, whether you're wanting to be a CRA or you're currently in the CRA role or whatever. And so that's our topic today, is the whole soft skills as it relates to being a CRA and how important it is. So I want to start with you, Miss Elizabeth. I mean, why did you decide to write that to begin with? And what were some of the key areas that you felt were the most important?
I have to back up for 1 minute because I love your accent so much. I come from a Southern family. And you calling me Miss Elizabeth reminds me of my family back in Virginia and South Carolina. And it just makes me love you even more.
Aww.
So I adore that you're doing that.
Oh, thank you.
I will say that the company is Clinical Research Fast Track. It's okay good. To name good, good. Them. They're a clinical research training organization, boot camp for people wanting to enter the industry. And they kind of, you know, resonate, their mission resonates with what you guys are doing because, you know, helping CRAs interview, helping CRAs develop to be able to get positions function in the workplace. And their target is like that too. So just back to your question, part of what I do, mainly what I do is I am someone who evaluates and trains and signs off new CRAs. And the public speaking skill component of CRA training, I think, cannot be, the importance cannot be measured and or reiterated too much. And I really think it needs to be something that is emphasized in these clinical research training programs and in CRA training programs. When over the years, as I've done public speaking, as I have trained and observed CRAs, and the disclaimer here is I made the same mistakes myself, and I still do sometimes, but I've gotten a little bit better after 23 years, and now I date myself. So everything when you're a new CRA is about reading the protocol, knowing the material, preparing. I'll give you an example. Initiation visits. The most important visit of the whole monitoring visit life cycle, because it's the training visit, right?
Yeah. Sets that whole expectation too, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. And we put so much pressure on ourselves to be perfect. And we read the protocol and we read the CRF completion guidelines and we log into the vendor websites and want to know everything. But what is lost in all that preparation is, how am I presenting the knowledge I'm acquiring to my colleagues?
Exactly. Yeah.
And the impetus for that LinkedIn post, and it's so great and serendipitous that you wanted to turn it into a blog, because it's also the topic of my, I'm speaking at ACRP Global Conference in May, and that's the topic, the importance of public speaking in clinical research. And so it's kind of a hot topic for me right now.
Right.
Over the years, including myself, so much preparation is spent learning the protocol that you don't think about the message delivery.
Right.
And in order to retain information, in order to capture the speaker and then capture their attention and then make sure they retain the information, we have to be able to break down really complicated jargon, not read every bullet, not read every word, make eye contact, smile, breathe, pause, practice pronunciations, the mm-hmm. little soft skills that can take a wonderful presentation and elevate it, or right. can take a wonderful presentation and make it more dry and boring than it probably already was.
Yeah.
So,
and it, yeah. And that, yeah, I agree. And that impacts the CRA's authority at the site too, positively or negatively, in the way that they present the information. And to your point, I mean, they can learn the protocol, but how they present it. And also, whenever you're making the eye contact with the audience, you're confirming understanding. You're seeing if they're paying attention. You're able to engage and see if there's any questions and that type of thing as well.
You're absolutely right. And I love that you said that, because when I first started 23 years ago, I was so nervous to speak. Like mm-hmm. I remember my first initiation visit. It was a disaster. I wasn't given any training really, because it was, like I said, 23 years ago, very small company I worked for. They were a good company, but they were just a small company.
Sure.
A lot of people wore the same hats, and we know how that goes. So I literally, to the best I could, I was brand new CRA. I read directly from the protocol, and the sponsor was there. And the sponsor told my boss afterwards that they were not pleased with my performance.
Oh.
And it was
no.
really disappointing, but it was and I understand why though, because I didn't know how to public speak. Nobody had really trained me, and I didn't understand the importance of slides,
right?
Bullets to guide a conversation as opposed to reading everything from a screen.
Yeah.
Looking around the room, taking the temperature mm-hmm. of the room, not only to make eye contact, like you so brilliantly said, Angela, to see how people are taking in the information, mm-hmm. but to see how people are reacting to
right.
you.
Right.
Look around and smile at people. Is the investigator looking at his watch, or his or her watch, excuse me, or looking like they're not interested at all?
Or they're texting somebody, or
they're texting, tapping, whatever. I can tell you right now that how a speaker performs, how the message is delivered, makes or breaks the tone of the entire visit. A brilliant pre-study visit I attended, maybe a year ago, I was evaluating the CRA, and she was an experienced CRA. She'd done a lot of initiation visits. And even though this was a pre-study visit, her public speaking experience and skills were brilliant. I mean, I was literally writing mental notes. She knew the material. She wasn't a television game show host. Hey, how you doing? But she just knew enough to speak to the main points. She didn't go through every single detail. She walked them through. Well, here's the study. Here are the endpoints. Here's the important things you need to know. She would pause from the screen and say, something that I've learned on this study, XYZ. Now, she had a lot of experience, and that comes with practice and implementation.
Sure.
But there are little things that early CRAs can do to make themselves seem more confident, make themselves seem more experienced, and really mm-hmm. capture their audience. And I kind of, if you don't mind, and I don't mean to stop your questions, if you don't mind, can I just go through the three main points of that blog that I wrote?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one was breathing, which, as you can tell, I don't do a lot of that. No, I
do. Me either.
My husband's like, you need to draw breath. I'm like, but
I'm too busy worried about what else I'm going to say.
but I do breathe during presentations, and I encourage people to, for many reasons. When we're about to speak, you get nervous. I don't care if you're the most experienced speaker in the world. I love to speak. I love public speaking. I still get anxious. It's just my process. So when you breathe, you center yourself. Mm-hmm. All these rampant thoughts, like you said, you're thinking about what you want to say. You're worried about how you're going to say it. You start talking. You talk too fast. If you breathe, to your external audience, it looks like you are pausing for effect. Yeah. Wow, that's an important point. They're thinking, what comes next? Get them on the edge of their seat, but you're really centering yourself. Yeah. Breathing slows your systems down. It slows the nervous system down, calms your anxiety. But to the outer audience, it's kind of like your poker face.
Yeah, and I think there's
breathing.
And I think there's some additional physicality to that as well. I know my massage therapist tells me, you know, whenever you blow out air, you can't have tense muscles and blow out at the same time. And so it really does. I mean, it affects your physicality in so many different ways to be able to help calm you, you know, especially if your knees are knocking in front of the.
It's so funny that you said that. Well, not funny. It's so awesome that you said that about the breathing, blowing out doesn't allow for tense muscles, because that's all part of the anxiety, you know, stomach and knots, tense muscles, posture. If you breathe, it helps you relax. You appear relaxed. You want to appear happy, confident, and relaxed to your attendees. Even if the material you're presenting, you're not an expert on, you're new to it, or it's boring.
It's kind of part of that fake it till you make it mentality, right? You know, that. Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Becky. Please go ahead.
No, absolutely. No, I was just hoping you would expand on that, because I've heard of this imposter syndrome. Sometimes people can feel if they're faking it too much, you know, what would you say to those people in this realm?
Well, I can tell you that I'm a big proponent of faking it till I make it. I have been plagued with, when I started in clinical research 20 years ago, I took over for a principal investigator who had not had a study coordinator for 6 weeks.
Oh my.
And I did not know that before I started the job, which is probably really good. My learning, no, seriously, because if I walked in and I saw all these case report forms everywhere and I didn't know what they were because I had no experience, I was a nurse, but I had no clinical research experience. So early, my assimilation and introduction to clinical research and learning was attached to stress, fraught with stress and anxiety, because I didn't have a lot of training. I didn't have anyone to really guide me through the beginning. And my first informed consent form that I had to draft, my first monitoring visit, my first traveling to an investigator's meeting was literally fake it till you make it. I'll tell a funny story that has to go along with this, and then I'll kind of blends into the point I was making. I was a study coordinator for about 11 months, and then I became a CRA, which it was easier back in the early 2000s to become a CRA.
It was.
It still wasn't easy, but it was much easier, right?
There was a clearer path, too.
Yes, there were, and there was less emphasis put on, you have 2 years of monitoring experience. So I was a study coordinator on a respiratory study, and then I became a CRA, and the company that I worked with as a coordinator, the CRO, hired me to be a CRA. And the sister study that started, or a similar study that started with the same pharmaceutical company, a lot of the same sites, including my old PI, were working on that subsequent study. Mm-hmm. So you go to the investigators meeting. I am a CRA at an investigators meeting. I feel like I see all these people that I worked with briefly as a coordinator. I'm this upstart. I was a coordinator for 11 months and now I'm a CRA. I'm surrounded by all these people at the investigator meeting that I know their names, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And here's a funny thing, kind of ties in the Southern we talked about. My name's Elizabeth, obviously, but I was called Buffy, which is like my brother's take on Elizabeth, Buffy, y'all, all the Southern stuff, right? So in my mind, I'm at this investigators meeting. I'm the monitor. I'm meeting my sites. Some of the sites I worked with as a coordinator, and now I'm their monitor. And the imposter syndrome and the anxiety and the fake it till you make it were all contrasting and fighting in my head. Because in my head, the big bubble was like, do these people know that I have no idea what I'm doing and that my name's Buffy? So I've been doing fake it till you make it from an early age. Now, that is not to be confused with, even if you don't know the answer, give an answer, give any information.
I agree.
Just to make
yes.
it. That's not you. Confused with that at all.
Yeah,
Thank you. In my opinion, has to do with kind of what Angela and Becky, we were talking about earlier with little things to calm your nervous system down, be mm-hmm. calm, soft skills, communication, presentation, smile,
yeah.
breathe, pause, like I don't know how to do. take a minute between points, look at your audience, any questions. Practice your pronunciations, especially yes. if it's a new therapeutic area. Practice your pronunciations, because if you don't know an area very well, but you can pronounce the words that are part of the scientific mm-hmm. jargon, mm-hmm. it's going to help exponentially with the impression that you make.
Agreed.
So Absolutely. Aside from the obvious presentation things we should do, like, you know, time our presentation, speak to your partner in front of a mirror, the little things, breathing, pausing, mm-hmm. collect yourself, practice your pronunciations, smile. Those are the soft skills that will make a presentation and elevate it. I truly believe
yeah.
that.
I agree. Yeah, because it makes you approachable. It gives you authority because they feel like you're there. You may not know everything, but you're there to support them. You're open. You're, you know, all of those types of things. Thank you for the clarity on the fake it till you make it. There's so much fraudulence in this industry, is it? Those of you guys listening, that's not what she's talking about.
No, not at all. No,
we're not faking that. You know,
fake it to make it, and then there are people who give answers.
Yes.
When they have no idea what they're talking about, exactly. And I always tell CRAs I'm training, there's nothing wrong with not knowing. It's knowing how to find the answer. A site would rather have you say, you know what, I don't know the answer. Let me get the answer, and I will give it to you as soon as possible. Whereas I've seen a lot of new CRAs and experienced CRAs give an answer, and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, that's not. You don't know the answer, and that's not right. And you're giving them wrong information. And it's not looking at them like looking, criticizing them or making them feel bad, but it's okay if you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You're not the scientist. Go ahead, Becky. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you don't. Exactly. You don't want to hurt your credibility either, because then, mm-hmm. you know, that causes disrespect. You know, you want to make sure you have that authority, like Angela said, and you're getting respect from people at the site. And, you know, if you admit what you don't know, we all don't know things. If you admit what you don't know, it's a much more respectable stance.
I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think the CRA's role, obviously, I mean, as owner of a CRA recruiting company, I think the CRA role is the most important role in this industry. So, but with that being said, I also think it's a servant's role. You know, you're there, I think, to serve that site, to give them that support that they need, the training, the education, the follow through, the responses. You go get what they need from an informational perspective. And I often don't see that CRAs do that, do they? They ride into the town on their white horse like they're the new sheriff, and, you know, and they're like, they beat the coordinators down, and they're not necessarily serving and supporting them. They're correcting them, which of course has to happen, but there's a balance there too, isn't there, Elizabeth?
There is. And from an early start, when I was a coordinator, the atmosphere around the academic institution, where academic health institution where I worked, was the research nurse who was the manager at this, it was a big university hospital academic center in San Diego. The whole paradigm, the whole atmosphere was, it's an adversarial relationship between study coordinators and CRAs. Mm-hmm. And they will come in and tell you everything that's wrong, and you do the minimum work required to help them. And the monitors bummer. That I worked with, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
I was just saying bummer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. No, this is 2000. So this is like different now. It's still out there, but very, very different. And this happened because of CRAs coming in and being too vigilant, study coordinators being too defensive, and people thinking that their way was the only way. The collaboration mindset wasn't very abundant. Mm-hmm. Well, I was very lucky because I was saw this, but then the monitors that helped me were night and day to what I had been told. Mm. My first monitoring visit, I was super defensive, waiting for them to tell me everything I did wrong. And he did show me what I did wrong, but he also taught me so much. Oh, and then the next CRA was the one who was instrumental in helping me become a CRA. And then she became my first CRA manager, and we're still friends.
Aww,
so I
love that.
it's such a great story. I see more and more of the collaborative versus the adversarial. Honestly, with the CRAs I've worked with over the past 5 years, and my own attitude that I was taught, we are there to help each other. Mm. One is not subordinate to the other.
Agreed.
I cannot do my job without you. You cannot do your job without me. And we work together well. Mm-hmm. And that's the predominant theme. And when I'm teaching for clinical research fast track, or when I'm training within my own position, I really try to stress that. Like, mm-hmm. we have got to help each other. Mm-hmm. We've got to work on a team, because we can't do our jobs well. And that affects the entire study management. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, relaying that to the recruiting world, often the way you treat a recruiter is how you're going to treat the side coordinator. We see that all the time where, you know, candidates will come through, as Angela said, on their high horse and think that, you know, the firm is to serve them. And while that is our purpose, we do want to make sure everybody's taken care of and everybody's got the good fit, you know, between candidates and clients and whatnot. But, you know, they think that if everyone is there to serve them, you know, that's how they're going to come into a site. You know, it's collaborative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And soft skills play a role in that.
Mm-hmm. Becky, your point is brilliant. How you treat, you know, the golden rule is like, oh, our grandparents talked about that. Our parents talked about that. But it frames, I try to make it frame everything I do. And mm-hmm. luckily, my colleagues, my friends in the industry have that mentality as well, honestly. And you guys, and how you've been with me, you know, it's been so positive and professional and respectful. And that's how it really should be. And it's in mm-hmm. every situation. The data manager, the CRA, the director.
Yeah.
There has to be. Now, there are tiers of employment, and there are, you know, tiers of roles. But you should never act. You should treat people the way you want to be treated across the board.
I agree.
You know, I'll use a great example that was given to me. My dad is a retired surgeon, and he was very he was the president of the surgical director of the hospital for many, many years. He was very, very very well known, brilliant. You know, we all think of our dads like this, but my dad was. And I'll tell you what, my dad spoke the same way to his colleagues on the board, to the housekeepers, to the phlebotomists in the hospital. Yep. Respect. Mm-hmm. He knew people's names, and I'll never forget that. Clinical research is an even playing field. You can have people coming in with doctors from other countries, a 2-year nursing, you know, certification like mm-hmm. me. We all come into clinical research, and we all start out, and we're all on the same level as far as like CRAs. It doesn't matter what you did in your other country or what you did in another life. You're a CRA, I'm a CRA. We all work together.
Exactly.
You know, study coordinators, same thing. I mean, the best study coordinators, when I was an early CRA, I learned how to do my job by awesome study coordinators who trained me and were like, no, that's not right. But who were respectful. I mean, that's all it's about. You learn from everybody. Yeah. You learn from people. You learn what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. But how you treat people, they will remember that. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I'm off my high horse now.
Well, no, but you're right. You know, my mom, she always put this in her head. It was, you get what you give. And it's the same, it's the, you know, the way you treat the lady who's checking you out at the grocery store, or your the sweet man that mows your yard for you, or the whatever you do. I mean, you're going to get what you give. And that makes a big difference in this industry, too. And we tell people that, too, whenever we're prepping them for interviews, because they get real nervous and they think of the hierarchy, especially if they're going to speak with a VP or a director. And I'm like, no. You guys are meeting for coffee, and you're talking about this really cool industry. You have things in common with this person. You've got passions that they share. Talk about it. It needs to be a conversation, because you have your contributions. They have theirs. Don't get hung up on the title. Respect the role and the therapeutic and the mission of the company and what that individual is doing to help propel that company forward, and have a coffee discussion with them so that they can see how much you love this industry.
I agree with you, and the soft skills relay over to the CRA role, follow through, dissemination of information, scheduling, follow up, speak to your sites the way you would want to be, spoken to, treated, treat everybody with respect, the soft skills, and everything kind of blurs over and everything bleeds over, one impacts the other.
I agree.
I'll tell you what, someone once, and I know we're about run out of time, someone once said to me, clinical research is the biggest small world in which you'll ever work. Don't burn bridges.
Yeah. And I call it incestuous. I call it incestuous. That's my language.
Theories I've worked with 19 years ago are now executive director at XYCRO. Yep. And people, do not burn your bridges.
I agree. One of the first CRAs that I ever fired sitting in this chair pinged me a couple of days ago, and he's clinical trial manager for a really large company. He was like talking about some of my posts and how much he appreciated them and everything. And I was like, well, I must have fired him very gracefully for him to still be connected and be reaching out. But it's, you're right. I mean, it you just really don't know. And I learned that in my prior to clinical research world too, is, you might be somebody's manager today, but they might be your manager tomorrow. And you just don't know.
You do not know.
This is common sense, but honestly, so much of common sense isn't that common anymore. It's crazy. Follow through, replying to correspondence promptly, all of these soft skills, they're stuff that we all need to evaluate and make sure that we've got it buttoned up, Thank you so much, ladies. Oh my goodness. What a great conversation.
I agree. You guys are awesome.
I'm super excited that you were with us, Miss Elizabeth. I hope you'll come back again.
I would love to come back again.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Angela. Thank you, Elizabeth, for joining us today. Thanks to everybody out there listening. We hope this discussion will help you as you cultivate your soft skills to land and maintain your perfect CRA position. And at CRA Resources, we understand you've got lots of options when it comes to selecting which clinical recruiting company to partner with. Not only do we take pride in working with the highest quality CRAs and site managers, we also only work with quality pharmas, biotechs, medical device companies, and CROs who recognize the importance and value of a CRA's role. So feel free to reach out at CRAresources.com for more info about our firm, and we really can't wait to work with you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that's it.
That was so awesome.